Welcome to the Martian Drive-In podcast number 12. My name's Terry Frost, and this time around it's all about superheroes. Where Nick Sauer and I are looking at two superhero movies from around the millennium. The first one being Mystery Men from 1999, starring Ben Stiller. And the second one is a nice little superhero flick from the year 2000, The Specials, starring Thomas Hayden Church, James Gunn, and Rob Lowe, both of which are kind of off the track a little bit, but both are a lot of fun.
The Martian Drive-In podcast is a four-weekly podcast of speculative fiction movie appreciation. Each 4 weeks, Terry and his guests will pick two movies and strip them to the bone. They can be new, old, or in between science fiction, fantasy, or horror. What they have in common is that they aren't the big blockbusters that everyone knows about. Martian Drive-In looks for the interesting films that might not be on your radar, but that might just be worth your attention and appreciation. Go to marsdrivein.blogspot.com. Feedback is always welcome via email at cultguru@gmail.com. That's K-U-L-T-G-U-R-U @gmail.com. Or you can leave a voicemail at area code 206-2033-299. Enjoy!
Welcome to the Martian Drive-In podcast number 12. My name's Terry Frost, and this is almost the first 12 months of the Martian Drive-In podcast. The 13th podcast, because it happens every 4 weeks, is going to be the the first anniversary podcast. So this time around, I've got Nick Sauer here. Say hello, Nick.
Hello.
Yep, and he and I are going to be doing superhero movies because they're the flavor of the month. And so, of course, in line with the Martian Drive-In podcast philosophy, we're doing kind of lesser-known superhero movies. In this case, from 1999, Mystery Men, and from 2000, one that I know a lot of people here like, The Specials, a very small film, which was written by James Gunn, the guy who is now directing Guardians of the Galaxy for Marvel. So, Nick, how's the weather in New Jersey?
Good, apart from the surprise snowstorm we had the other day. It was they're not unheard of in March, just a little unusual. It's fortunately, it's all melting off very nicely. So.
Yeah, and here we've got basically 100-degree temperatures in the daytime, and it gets down to the mid-80s, your measurement of temperature, at night. So, we're getting very unusual March weather here. You're getting slightly unusual March weather there, and yet there are people denying the global warming's happening.
Well, there's a lot of people like that. So.
Yes, unfortunately they are, and most of them are on the internet. But so what have you been watching?
I finished up Jekyll, actually the BBC miniseries that came out, let's say 2004, that time frame, sometime around there.
Is that with James Nesbitt?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I started watching it with Diane, and then we got sidetracked, so I just said, I wanted to just revisit it, so I can finish it off. And then, I just finished season two of The 4400, which is an old show from roughly the same time period here. It's a lot of people say it was sort of the precursor to the show Heroes. That was the big network superhero show.
Yeah, Heroes is an interesting one, the way it was really popular, and then they just basically screwed it in the second season.
Yeah, I halfway through the first season because I said, yeah, as I told my wife, I actually saw this when I was reading the X-Men. I kind of didn't really need to revisit it.
Well, I'll give you a couple of tips for things to look at, and they're English series, so you only have to watch six episodes or so. Yeah. The second season of Black Mirror, Charlie Brooker's anthology series, has just completed. Recommend them. Absolutely. Really solid speculative fiction stuff. Yeah, and the other thing is Utopia. The first season runs six episodes, and it's a conspiracy theory thing in England to do with a second volume of a graphic novel which has a secret about some government hidden agendas in it.
Oh, cool.
And it's really freaky because it does this beautiful thing with the cinematography, which is very, very cool. You know how usually you'll get those blue tones and the gray tones in conspiracy theory series where they change the the color tone value in the series to reflect the subject matter.
Right.
Yep. In this case, they use really popping bright colors all the way through it.
Oh,
it's like a bloody Douglas Sirk film. And the vividness actually fits in with the theme because there's a plan to do certain nasty things to the human race, and the eye-poppingly bright colors kind of reflect how cool life is, even when really nasty things are happening. And very, very seriously nasty things happen in this series.
Oh, cool.
Like, I'm talking about stuff that makes The Walking Dead look a little bit mild in some ways.
Awesome. I got to check it out now.
You've got to check it out. It looks like there might be a second series because it is left on an uncertain ending, but I really, really recommend it.
Yeah.
So what else have I been watching? I've been watching a lot, and I always put it up on my Facebook. But I did see Argo, which I kind of liked.
Yeah, we were very happy with that.
Yeah, and I've got The Master to watch because I really hate Scientology and L. Ron Hubbard, so I'm going to enjoy that a lot with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Was that a theatrical release? Or I remember reading about it, and then I didn't know where it was going to show up at.
It was a theatrical release, and my dear Auntie Torrent has got me a copy.
Okay, good for her.
Yes, well, it's going to be coming on cable TV anyway. I'm just jumping a month or two ahead, so... I pay for my cable. It's just that I kind of anticipate it in some ways.
Well, I'm sure we'll be checking it out because Diane's view of religion pretty much parallels yours. So,
always a good thing to know that you're not alone in the world. I'm looking forward to watching The Master, but I want to do it at a time when I can just sit down and dedicate a solid block of time and not have any interruptions.
Yep.
So I'm kind of holding it off for that. But, and I've been watching a lot of sleazy sci-fi channel movies and really weird old English horror films from the 1950s, one called The Woman Eater,
which
is about a carnivorous plant.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
Which only ever eats really attractive women.
Yep, that's how they work.
Well, when I was single, it was how I worked too, but... it's a little bit of fun, and it's very kind of low budget and silly, but I did enjoy it while I was watching it. But a little bit of that. Did you see the Iron Man 3 trailer?
Yes. There was like a couple of them, weren't there?
Yeah, the latest one came out, and I did a talk for a group called the Nova Mob at a public library on Wednesday night. And we were talking about, basically they said, do you want to come up, they give me a week's notice on this. They said, do you want to come up and talk about the state of the art in genre films? And, that's such a broad category now.
Right.
Where the hell do I start?
Yeah, it wasn't like when we were kids, right?
Yeah, it's not like there were going to be like three movies coming out in the next 12 months, most of them by big studios and most of them starring Michael Yort and Jenny Agutter. We really got into a good discussion about how social media is so important now with the release of a film. And the release of these trailers for things like Iron Man 3 are an event, and people do really get involved in them. And that viral marketing, and it doesn't cost them much to put up a trailer and then stick it all over Facebook and Twitter and G+ and whatever else they want to put it on. The costs on that are minimal, but the footprint of it's enormous.
Right.
And I think that's incredibly smart marketing. And there's a book called John Carter and the Gods of Hollywood, which shows how John Carter did the exact opposite of that. You can get it on an e-book edition for about like $3 or $4. It was on special for 99 cents when I got it.
Yeah, I really want to check that out, actually.
I recommend it because it shows exactly what not to do when you've got $250 million movie at stake. And most of the faults in the thing are the back-of-house stuff. The studio head at the time was a total idiot.
Uh-huh.
The people running their social media profile who select the clips and the trailers were stupid. And it just shows all along the way where things went wrong.
When you say idiot, was it just lack of experience or just really, really dumb? I mean,
I think bad choice of material to release.
Okay.
You've got to do the grabbers. You've got to do the eye-popping gosh wow bit without giving too much away. You've got to put the eye candy in there and a little bit of the intelligent stuff to put chum in the water so the fish will attack.
Right.
And they just didn't do that. And the other pretty big problem is that the original story, Princess of Mars, which is 100 years old now,
mm-hmm.
was strip mined by everything as far back as Flash Gordon for little bits and pieces of business.
Yep.
So all they had left that they could really put on is the bare bones of it, because George Lucas and Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon and everything in between.
Yeah, Flash Gordon's Trip to Mars, the second serial. The Mars is clearly Barsoom. It's great.
Absolutely, and because of that, there just wasn't enough new in the franchise to sustain it, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. I grew up in Edgar Rice Burroughs, so I love his stuff. So.
Yeah, it works well on the page, but it really has been stolen from.
Yeah.
To a disgusting extent.
Yeah, Star Wars in particular, I really thought, or took a lot from it.
I got in such trouble on Wednesday night for saying that George Lucas was a real prick and Star Wars was way overrated. A couple of people walked out, which is good, because I got rid of the people I didn't want to be there anyway.
Well, Star Wars was the big thing. Star Wars was a huge game changer for genre film. I mean, it really sort of legitimized genre film as as something that, like Hollywood. I think that's when Hollywood execs realized, oh wow, we can make money at this.
But I think that what George Lucas did was he got the best techs in the world and let them have a go at it.
Yes, absolutely. I would agree with that. Yes,
but that's not the same thing as being a good movie maker.
Oh yeah, well his directorial skills are obviously in question. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean he may have been better. I mean, in a different universe, he might have been better off doing documentaries. I think he's got more the temperament for that than he does for narrative films.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, that was a bit of fun and kept me off the streets for a night. So. We're gonna do. We'll do Mystery Men first. We'll take a little break and have a sip of water or whatever we're drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come back, we'll do the 1999 film Mystery Men, directed by Kinka Usher, starring Hank Azaria, Claire Fulani, Janine Garofalo, Eddie Izzard, Ben Stiller, Greg Kinnear, William H. Macy, and Paul Rubens, and our local boy, Jeffrey Rush.
In a place called Champion City, forces of good and evil,
Captain Amazing, what a surprise,
are about to collide.
Well, we've always been each other's greatest nemesis. It's a sigh.
Nemesis.
Now, with the city's one true hero missing,
Captain Amazing is in danger.
Kaboom.
Who will step forward?
You again. Wannabes.
To answer the call of justice.
Don't mess with the volcano, my man. Because I will go Pompeii on your butt.
Oh, golly.
They've been waiting for this moment.
The city's in peril, Lucille.
All of their lives.
Butch needs his vest back.
Well, it's my vest, too. I bought it for him.
But now that their time has come.
I'm a superhero, too.
What's his power?
Excuse me.
They're going to need all the help they can get.
We got to find a lot of superheroes really quickly.
State your name and power.
PMS Avenger. I only work 4 days a month. Is there a problem with that?
No.
No. I am the Waffler.
Waffle Man! I am!
Am I too late to try out?
Sorry.
You're an all-star. Get your game on. Go play.
You're in.
Wow, my first mission and we're going to rescue Captain Amazing.
Here we go.
Universal Pictures presents...
We need to talk about your plans.
I'm going to kill you.
Right, that's the part that really doesn't work for me.
A new league of heroes that step to a different beat.
Well, I am a ticking time bomb of fury.
I don't find you threatening. At all.
Let's do some carnage.
We're not your classic heroes. We're the other guys.
Mystery Men.
I'm invisible. Can you see me?
Yes.
Wow.
Maybe you should put some shorts on or something if you want to keep fighting evil today.
Okay, we're back. That was the Mystery Men trailer. And Nick is going to now do a Reader's Digest synopsis of the plot for the movie.
Okay, yeah, the Mystery Men is basically a superhero movie. It starts in Champion City. It's about a... with Champion City is the purview of this superhero Captain Amazing, who's effectively on the verge of putting himself out of business because he does too good a job of nailing the villains. But the real focus of the story is a group of sort of amateur superheroes with sort of questionable super abilities that are working to try to establish themselves as superheroes. And over it's really the focus on that and the whole... there's actually a whole network, it turns out, of these sort of less than spectacularly powered super beings in Champion City. And just the really thrust of the movie is the whole dynamic of these, you know, you've got all these very, you know, it takes quite a bit of odd personality to sort of throw on a costume and start going and fighting crime. And the interaction of those various personalities is really sort of the thrust of the film and them trying to establish themselves. The setup of the film is that Captain Amazing, because of his situation, having nearly putting himself out of business, arranges to have his one of his big villains, Casanova Frankenstein, released from the local mental institution, which proves to be a bit of his own doing there, and forcing the... I don't know how much spoilers we want to go into on the film, but
Well, a little bit.
Okay, it leaves these amateurs to basically now deal with, you know, what is a really dangerous supervillain, you know, on their own without any sort of, like, you know, high-powered gun to help them.
Yep, and Casanova Frankenstein being played by the local Melbourne boy, Geoffrey Rush.
Yeah, who most people would probably recognize from the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise there.
Yeah, and a lot of other things. I mean, he got the Oscar for Shine. He did Quills, that really interesting Phil Kaufman movie about the Marquis de Sade.
Right.
Where the only bad thing about that film is you do get to see Geoffrey Rush's dick. And it's not to be recommended.
not high on your priority list there.
No, but you do get to see Kate Winslet's chest as well, so there's a balance there.
Yeah,
among the two of them. But I mean, he's great. He does this kind of slightly European accent, making him more as a kind of Bertolt Brecht character.
Yeah,
which is a lot of fun. Ben Stiller's in the movie, and I like it in spite of the fact that Ben Stiller's in it with his enormous head and little body.
And his enormous personality, enormous ego to go with it, apparently, is from what I've heard from the director's stuff. And
yeah, this is something we should mention too, that Eddie Izzard's in it as well. I love the Disco Boys, yes. One of these criminal gangs, the Disco Boys, with Tony P played by Eddie Izzard.
Yes, I was really, it's funny, this most recent viewing, I watched it again, and it's like my fifth time through the film, I think, and I was really, I had never, I somehow never had totally skipped my notice before the other times I'd seen it.
Yeah. And every time you see them, they got like Disco Inferno or Boogie Woogie playing in the background,
yeah,
which is kind of cool. It's like they carry their music around with them.
Yeah, they got that huge car from
the Pimpmobile kind of car. And Greg Kinnear is an interesting character because he's got that all-American boy look. But underneath it, there's always a sense of corruption about the characters he plays, kind of like in autofocus when he's playing Bob Crane.
I haven't seen that, so.
Yeah, but he's always got that kind of, you know, on the surface he looks clean cut, but underneath it he's a bastard.
So this role wasn't much of a stretch for him, is what you're saying?
No, I think it's something he does well. I mean, to all credit to him, I think it's something he does well, but I think that he's very good at playing that banality of evil kind of character.
Yeah. Yeah, here it was really cool. That's one of the things I liked about this movie was that they addressed the whole idea that, you know, you'd have, you know, if you're a superhero, you'd have sponsors, corporate sponsorship. And so Captain Amazing's outfit is just covered with patches of all these companies that are his sponsors, which I thought was that made perfect sense to me when I saw the film, and was something I was surprised hadn't been examined previously in other superhero media.
He's kind of like a NASCAR driver uniform almost.
But
he's not the focus of the film. I mean, the superheroes, the mystery men are kind of cool. I mean, you got Mr. Furious, played by Ben Stiller, who basically acts by making the veins in his forehead pop out.
Yes, he gets really, really angry, yeah.
He gets really, really angry. The Shoveler, William H. Macy, and I love William H. Macy in anything. I mean, the guy can't do any wrong.
Yep,
he did Mamet films. He worked with Mamet on the stage. In fact, they went to university together, David Mamet and William H. Macy. And he brings a lot to this. I mean, I love it when good actors bring their A game to kind of B pictures.
Yeah.
And he very much did in this, particularly with the relationship with his family.
Yeah.
It kind of works and gives a heart to the movie that it might not have had otherwise.
Yep.
Yeah. And then you got Hank Azaria playing the Blue Raja, the effete English master of cutlery.
Who has to keep constantly explain why he doesn't have any blue in his costume. Yeah,
and keep explaining to his mum, played by Louise Lothar, who was in Mary Hartman, and was married to Woody Allen at one time.
Oh, she was? I didn't know about that.
Yeah, she's in there playing his mum. He's got to explain why the cutlery keeps going missing from the drawers, and he's using it to fight villains with. And he's kind of cool in there. And then you've got Janine Garofalo playing the bowler with that groovy bowling ball with her father's skull in it. I mean, that's just a nice...
You put your dad's head in a bowling ball? No, the guys at the pro shop did it for me.
And then you've got Bleem, played by Paul Rubens, who's a lot of fun, with his ass-based superpower.
Yes, pull my finger.
And then you got Kel Mitchell playing Invisible Boy, who can only turn invisible when no one's looking at him.
Yep.
Which does have its limitations.
Yes, yeah, but it does have its uses too, as you saw in the film.
It does have its uses, absolutely. It is used well. And then you got the best character of all, Dr. A. Hiller, played by Tom Waits, who is a god in a number of different realms. And you see him right at the start of the film. I mean, he's incredible. I'm going to play the clip now of him chatting up the old lady in the nursing home.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm a doctor. I do laser hair removal. I do acupuncture. I do aromatherapy, that type of thing. Would you like something sweet? Go ahead. Take one. What do you say we go back to your place and talk?
My roommate's there.
Bonus.
You're a rascal.
Tom Waits, he's a master of, he's a specialist in creating non-lethal weapons. And he also really likes basically nailing pensioners.
Yeah. Yes.
They don't seem to mind him doing it either, which is just kind of group thing. Yeah. I love the fact that he's got that kink about him that he picks up ladies in nursing homes and has threesomes with old ladies.
That was good.
It's very cool, and I think that there should have been more Tom Waits in a sense.
He lives in the amusement park there, and
absolutely, and he does things like canned tornadoes, and what was the gun he had that made people angry?
Oh yeah, the blame gun.
Yeah, the blame. Yeah. Where it makes it, people you shoot angry at each other.
Yeah. Well, I like the bit where they're going in, that one time they're walking into his place and he's there, there's that weird noise, and you come around the corner and it's him playing that bizarre instrument. That, you know, the
Did you see Seven Psychopaths yet with Tom Waits in it?
No, I still want to see that film. So.
Tom Waits is fantastic in there carrying around a white rabbit. And... oh, geez, any movie gets a lift with Tom Waits in it. It doesn't matter what you get him to do, just having Tom Waits in the film. First, you have that what the fuck moment, and you go, oh, cool.
Yeah.
And not many people can do that in a film.
Yeah.
And then you have Wes Studi playing the Sphinx, whose only superpower is he can cut guns in half with the power of his mind.
Yep.
And he's enigmatic.
Yes. Yeah, like how that one, like how Mr. Furious basically calls him on his bullshit at one point in the film.
Yeah. And everybody else is going, no, I'm learning something from this.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
That's
what you're going to say, right?
Yeah. I mean, this film is just purely just pop culture mashup in a sense, isn't it? I mean, yes. You got the disco boys, you got the... Did you notice who one of the frat boys was
in the frat boy game? Who was it? I remember... Pardon?
Michael Bay.
Yes, that's right. I remember I was surprised when I found that out this time, actually.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool. Michael Bay just having two lines in the film. I think he's a much better extra than he ever is a movie director or producer for that matter. But he's in there as well.
I'll take your word for that, Bay. I don't see his movies based on people opinions of people like you. So.
The giant robot films really don't work for me, and I that was another issue that I talked about on Wednesday night at this talk. How why Michael Bay movies work in an international context, because like things like Avatar, they're really broad pictures. They're painted broadly. They're very vivid and larger than life. So they play really well to everybody. It doesn't matter whether you're a high school student in Miami or whether you're a kid in the streets of Mumbai. They play equally well because they're culturally transparent.
Right.
They're very large and broad. So billions of people can watch them and get as much out of them as each other. But it does dumb it down and make it very simplistic and stupid.
There's only so much story you could tell when you're going for that format, yeah.
Yeah, so that was my big insight for the whole night. So that went down okay. But, Mystery Men's kind of cool. And Champion City's an interesting construct as well. There's a bit of talk about it in the extras, where they tried to make it a little bit like San Francisco, a multicultural city.
Right, yeah.
A little bit like Hong Kong and things like that. It's a mashup of very...
foreign language signs all over the place in neon and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, and I think they did it pretty well. Had about a $58 million budget, made back about $3 million.
Yeah, that's too bad. Because I saw it theatrically, and the people I was with enjoyed it. But after that, it seems like everyone doesn't like it. You know, I'm just baffled by the people's dislike of this film.
I think it was one of those movies that came about 8 or 10 years before the wave hit.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
And that could be the issue. With that and the specials as well, I mean, the superhero movies, if it had to come out just, say, 2 years before Kick-Ass
right.
Super, kind of, it may have worked.
Yeah.
You getting a little feedback at your end, or?
It was a little bit of a breaking up, but I think it's fine now. So.
Okay, good. Yeah, we'll keep going then. Anything else you want to say about Mystery Men? Give us the origins of Mystery Men, because you've done your homework.
Oh, yeah. That's, I had done my homework prior to the movie, actually, when I saw it. The group was actually first mentioned as a comic book called Flaming Carrot Comics. It was an independent book written by Bob Burden, black and white interior, which was commonplace to the independent books at the time. And it's literally about a flaming carrot. The guy wears a giant carrot mask with a flame on top, and the rest of his outfit's pretty much normal except for the swim fins. And he runs around basically fighting crime in his own inimitable style. But right around issue 16 it was, they introduce this group called the Mystery Men. And it is clearly inspired by the Watchmen, because as on the cover of issue 16 says, tougher than the A-Team, newer than the new universe, not quite as good as the Watchmen. So I'm sorry, it was inspired by The Watchmen, I'm sorry. Which had just come out about a year before. It was a two-issue thing. The story was, I cloned Hitler's feet. so you had these jackboots jumping around, going cheating people. it makes sense in the context of the universe. But nothing was ever really done with them after that. Bob Burden did want to do a Mystery Men comic book. And he ultimately did, and it came out actually about a month prior to the movie. And it's actually interesting, in the first issue, the front page, he sort of has a little page worth of text where he talks about how the arrangement worked between him and Universal, I guess it was, about who owned what characters and stuff, but it was more of a serious attempt to do more on Bob Burton's attempt to do a serious comic book, and it really kind of doesn't work, and it's only lasted 4 issues, and the last 2 issues were much better because he sort of drifted back to that, you know, his sort of quirky humor style. But that's where the Mystery Men ultimately came from, and the movie just went in a completely different direction with the concept.
Yeah, they do talk about that, and you know, the interesting thing about this is the director, Kinky Asha, only directed this film, really.
Yeah, that's right. This was the one film that he did, yeah.
Yeah, which is, I don't think he did a bad job of it. I think you can tell it's a first-time director to a certain extent, but I don't think he did a bad job at all.
Yeah. Why did he do no other films? Was it just a failure of this financially, or?
It's hard to tell. I mean, unless there's specific information. Maybe he wanted to go in a different direction. Maybe he got fed up with Hollywood. You know, he had his shot. And it's really difficult to kind of peg it down with a lot of people how they make their choices, whether they're forced upon them or whether they choose to go in a different direction or not.
Well, yeah, the leaving would make sense. I heard that there was a lot of arguing on the set about direction of the film from the actors, so maybe that turned them off or something.
Yeah, some of the back of, you know, like the documentary footage on the DVD version that I've got, kind of there is that slight tension, which is kind of obvious in a way. But did you see a couple of the other cameos in this film? Dane Cook's in there playing the Waffler.
Oh, no, I didn't. You're absolutely right. He was. That's right. He was.
And Doug Jones, who's in everything these days with the motion capture stuff, played Pencilhead when they were recruiting.
I don't know who he is. So.
He's the guy who did Pan's Labyrinth, playing all of the CGI monsters in that.
Oh, he was? Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I love
that. Yeah, so Doug Jones has done a lot of that kind of stuff. He played, what was it? The aquatic guy in Hellboy.
Oh, really? Oh, cool. Yeah. What's his name? Oh, I'm sorry. I can't remember his name. I know who you're talking about. Yeah. Something Lincoln, right?
Abe Sapiens.
Abe Sapiens, that's right, Abe Sapiens.
Yeah. So he did all of that kind of stuff because he's a very skinny actor and he's very good he's like, him and the other guy, Andy Serkis, are the two motion capture guys. If you need a short guy, you get Andy Serkis. If you need a long, skinny, geeky kind of character for motion capture, you go with Doug Jones. Yeah. But, it's good to see people early in their careers when they're just earning a buck. Yeah, I mean, Mystery Men, it's kind of one of those ones that was deliberately designed to be a cult film in some ways, and I'm not sure whether it quite got there or not.
Yeah, I would agree with that,
yeah. Yeah, but it's a lot of fun, and it came out at a time when there wasn't much else kind of in that realm coming out.
Definitely, yeah.
I mean, the DVD does have a bunch of extras, and it has a few bits and pieces of deleted footage. Mm-hmm. And you can tell the director, in a sense, is a first-time director, because some of the stuff in the deleted footage is better than the stuff that got kept in the film.
Oh, okay.
So, the little expert we played with Tom Waits has actually deleted footage.
That's
just so cool and transgressive and fun. I mean, that's where the movie needed to go. I think it needed to embrace its weirdness.
Yeah.
To a slightly bigger extent than it did.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of that Hollywood big budget movie thing. Definitely, it's definitely trying to play that card. You can tell.
Absolutely. Anything else you want to say about?
No, that's a good cover. I think we covered everything. I just love the film. I mean, every time I watch it, I like it more and more every time. So.
Oh, cool. It's just one of those films that we forget sometimes, but it's all part of that path towards the big blockbuster Marvel films we have now.
Right, yeah.
And the big blockbuster DC Warner Brothers films we have now.
Yeah.
They're all of the continuum, and these guys who didn't have the VFX that we have now really were trying to kind of embrace comic fandom in a way.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to take another break now, and then when we get back, we're going to do the news from the planet Mars, and then talk about the specials from 2000, directed by Craig Mazin, stars Thomas Hayden Church, James Gunn, Rob Lowe, Jamie Kennedy, Sean Gunn, Patrick Brewster, Jordan Ladd, and a bunch of other people.
For you see, nothing ever happens on Mars. No sports or entertainment or strength in bars. You stand the ground, you stand some more on the planet named for a Roman god of war. Nothing ever happens on Mars. No supersonic airplanes, no sporty cars. The sun comes up, the sun goes down. You can't go to the country, you can't go to town. Boring, 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 boring.
And we're back, and we're going to do now the news from the planet Mars, and there's a bit of news. There was that weird bump they found on the rock, a little thing that looked like a metal extrusion coming out of a rock. And everyone got excited because they thought it was a hood ornament off a car.
Or a piton driven into the rock by a Martian, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those Martian rock climates are just clumsy little stuff. You being a man of science, you can explain what the little bump on the rock was on Mars.
Oh, the latest theory I'd heard was from a geologist was that apparently rocks that develop fissures in them, you can have mineral deposits that build up in them. And they're metallic, like this one apparently is, the rock will eventually erode away, leaving this, you know, metallic cast of the void in the rock. And that's apparently what it is. He had a term for it. I just don't remember what it is off the top of my head.
Yeah, but it looks cool. And it's one of those weird things that you don't expect that freaks people out in a very fun way.
Yep.
Absolutely. There is some other news from Mars, too. There's a possibility that a comet is going to hit Mars in 2014. Not just a little Russian kind of meteorite kind of thing, but I'm talking about a full-on comet. The odds are about 1 in 600 at the moment, but they're going to narrow it down in the next few months. October 19th, 2014. I'm kind of hoping that it hits Mars. I mean, I know there aren't any Martians there, so it's all right.
Right.
But the whole emphasis that people are taking on it is we've got to be careful and we've got to find ways to stop these things because this could happen to us.
Right. Well, the big advantage we have is that we have this thing called the moon running interference for us, which Mars doesn't have the luxury. It has two tiny little moons, but our moon is gigantic, a vacuum cleaner compared to their dinky moons there.
Yeah, their ones are just basically two enormous potatoes.
Yes.
around. Apparently this one's a quite a big one too. The ice ball could be anywhere from 9 to 30 miles across, 15 to 50 kilometers.
Wow.
But the one that killed the dinosaurs was like 10 kilometers
across. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That crosses planet killer territory right there, yeah.
Absolutely, it does. And one of the things it's going to do, apart from maybe knocking the Curiosity rover off its wheels, is that it may cause flash floods on Mars because there's a lot of water underneath in frozen form. So if you suddenly get the comet hitting, you get a lot of heat generated and all that water melts and causes enormous floods across Mars.
So if it doesn't knock Curiosity over, it could sink it into the mud there, is what you're saying.
It could surf its way all the way to... Who knows? I mean, have they put airbags in that thing in case it gets caught in a flash flood?
I have no idea, yeah.
But one way or the other, it's one of those things where you kind of hope it's going to hit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Shoemaker-Levy hitting Jupiter. That was kind of cool, and we only saw it really weak.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Real weak.
Yeah, but... so, yeah, we're kind of hoping that Mars will get hit by that. Basically, it's going to be up to a million Hiroshimas worth of splat.
Yep. In the serious megatonnage territory, yeah.
Absolutely. But at this stage, we don't know. The comet's really cool name, too. It's called Comet Siding Springs. It's named after an observatory here in Australia, Siding Springs. I've been past it.
Yeah, I recognize the name.
Yeah, it's in southern New South Wales. So that was kind of cool. They found it and they went, we're going to name it after our place where we work. So that's kind of cool. But apparently, the crater is going to be... doesn't actually say how big it's going to be, but it will have a profound effect on Mars for years to come if it does crash into it in October next year.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of cool that we can kind of suss these things out a lot better than we used to.
Right, yeah. You learn that way.
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll turn the Curiosity rover towards it if it is going to crash.
Yeah.
Wherever it is on their horizon, they'll turn all of the space probes towards it so they can capture the apocalyptic footage.
Yeah. We still have orbital stuff that can shoot the surface, right?
Yeah.
Because that would be the most interesting to watch, I think.
Yeah, to a certain extent, but it'd be interesting just to see that kind of wall of mud basically swallowing space.
Yeah.
March keeps getting interesting. I mean, I've been doing this for almost a year now with the Martian Driving podcast and talking about the news from Mars. And every month it gets more and more interesting. And that's very, very cool for me.
Yeah.
But that's just basically it. Mars may end up not getting its deposit back. And getting hit by a comet, not just a shitty little meteor the way Russia did, but a full-on dirty ice ball.
Yep.
And so that's about it. No other news from the planet Mars of interest, but I'm sure we will keep people updated in October.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's get on with the specials. I'm just going to play the trailer for the specials.
Meet the specials.
Special. It's like being the last sailor in line behind the whore.
The seventh best superhero team in the world.
As a special, you'll experience all sorts of exotic wonders.
We're there for the oddball, the rebel, the outcast, the geek.
You're a Dudley girl. You're flower head.
They've made mistakes.
Don't pull yet.
I'm not going to pull.
Is that a maxi pad on his face?
They've been misunderstood.
Are you Minuteman?
Minute man. Do I look like a soldier from the Revolutionary War? No. I turn small. Think.
With superpowers comes super responsibility, damn it.
That's clever. Love your outfit.
And just when a toy company was about to make them famous...
Superheroes don't get Oscars, we get action figures.
They were screwed.
Here comes Mrs. Indestructible. There's the special.
He was wrestling, kiss for me.
I'm black. I think you have vaguely African features.
As of today, we are no longer.
Tell us what's wrong.
What's wrong?
Beyond the fact that you're screwing my wife...
Now,
the stroke broke us apart.
Ted, you need therapy.
These underdogs must face their fears.
You're the one that needs therapy.
Fall in love.
You want to go back to my place?
I'm gay!
Mother!
And find the courage to be heroes in their own special way. Regent Entertainment presents a completely original comedy.
I extracted this from an 83-year-old Caucasian male.
Here we go again.
It's a pretty good one.
Rob Lowe, Jamie Kennedy, Thomas Hayden Church, and Melissa Joan Hart.
There are no useless specials. Except Mr. Smart, he's a washer.
The specials.
Those pants make you look like you don't have any pop.
I know that.
Okay, and we're back, and that was a trailer from The Specials, a $1 million movie. It was made in 2000. It was directed by Craig Mazin and written by James Gunn, who is now directing Guardians of the Galaxy for Marvel, which is one of their new big tentpole movies for the next 18 months or so. And oddly enough, just as we were about to do this, James Gunn did a Q&A session on Formspring while he was in pre-production in London for Guardians of the Galaxy, and I asked him what do we need to say about the specials? And I got a reply. And he said to listen to the audio track, the commentary track that him and Pratchett Brewster did. Now, I haven't had time to yet, but Nick, you've listened to it. And what do you reckon?
Yeah, it's really good. It goes into, they actually talk as much about just the overall events surrounding the movie as the movie itself. They actually don't. It's one of those. It's not one of those commentaries where they go scene by scene and comment as to what's happening. They actually talk a lot about, give a lot of background as far as the, you know, what was involved in making the film, how they got the money together, what, you know, the history of how the, you know, the script evolved, how the, in, which is actually the history of how the film itself evolved and was eventually made. So it was really interesting to listen to.
Well, cool. I mean, I will be listening to it because you've given me a copy of it. But yeah, I mean, James Gunn started out interestingly too. He wrote Romeo and Juliet for Troma Films, right. A good New Jersey company.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's true.
I kind of liked Romeo and Juliet because it's got Lemmy from Motorhead doing iambic pentameter. He narrates it and does this kind of fucked up iambic pentameter thing, which is hilarious to see him do. It's a good film too. I mean, I should do Stramer films for Martian Drive-In at some stage because there are some very interesting ones out there. But yeah, do you want me to do the plot thing for the specials?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead?
Okay, I'll do this one. Okay, I'm reading this a little bit off Wikipedia. The specials tells the story of the day in the life of a ragtag group of misfit superheroes. The specials are decent as far as superhero teams go, but they never rise above in popularity or prestige because of their indie status. They're basically about the sixth or seventh most popular superhero group in the world, and it takes place on the day that they're about to get their own action figures, which doesn't go well for them. Now, the heroes in there are Strobe, played by Thomas Hayden Church, Ms. Indestructible, played by Pratchett Brewster, the Weevil, played by Rob Lowe, Deadly Girl, who is Kelly Caulfield. Oh, no, Deadly Girl is not Judy Greer.
Judy Greer, yeah.
Power Chick is Kelly Caulfield.
Right.
Amok, played by Jamie Kennedy. Alien Orphan, played by Sean Gunn, who's James Gunn's brother. And Eight, who is eight people with one mind.
Yep.
And the new girl, Nightbird, played by Jordan Ladd, is the newest member, who is a teenage girl who has bird powers.
Right. And that's the other thing, is they're bringing in their new member that day as well. That's the other big plot. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Who has bird powers, basically, and she lays eggs with special things inside them.
Yep.
But you never get to see that. You don't actually get to. Until right at the end, you don't get to see anybody use superpowers, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And it's done almost as in mockumentary style, because there's a lot of talking to the camera and being interviewed after the events happen.
Yep.
And people talking about things. And, it's a lot of fun, and it's kind of is very indie in its way. This one made more money, in fact, than, I mean, Mystery Men was $56 million. And made like three. This film cost $1 million and made like eight or nine times its money back.
Right.
And I think it works. I mean, it's a very small film. You can tell it's a small budget. But I think they make it work because it's more about the characters than it is about being a superhuman.
Right, yeah, I would agree with that. They focus more on the personalities here. Definitely.
Which are pretty screwed up personalities. I mean, Amok's kind of a reformed supervillain.
Yeah,
who's bright blue with bright red eyes, which never helps you in anything. The Weevil's a backstabbing little prick.
Yeah.
The Strobe is a self-important and not very bright guy with a lot of ego.
On his high school football team was the takeaway I got from that.
Yeah. And Judy Greer playing Deadly Girl is kind of cool because she can go to the world of the dead and resurrect zombies and all sorts of things like that, and that kind of affects her social life a lot.
Her personality definitely reflects that.
She's very goth and dark. Oh, we forgot the other. There's one more superhero in there as well. There's the super intelligent guy played by Jim Zelevic,
Mr. Smart. Yeah, you also forgot U.S. Bill, actually.
Yeah, U.S. Bill, who's very, very strong, but not very, very bright.
Yeah. It all went to the strength and not much to the brains department on him.
Yeah, but he's well-meaning. He's a nice little guy. I mean, he's very kind of earnest, which is kind of nice. Mr. Smart is the super intelligent guy. He claims to be the smartest person on Earth, and he invents gadgets like a smell machine and a device which increases his sense of smell 3,000 times.
Yeah.
And gets really upset because he discovers that most of the world's covered in urine.
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, this film, it's a very, very tongue-in-cheek film, and it does kind of deconstruct the tropes of superhero teams really well. Most superhero teams, at the time at least, were not as nuanced as this one was, the ones in the comic weren't anywhere near as nuanced as the specials.
Right.
And they did the joke about the specials, like, how do you get to become a special? You go to special school. And they kind of do. There's a great love for superhero comics that is reflected in this film.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's actually one of the things that's interesting in the commentary too. Now that you're mentioning it, I forgot. Oh, you also didn't mention James Gunn was played by Newt Man, I should say.
Newt Man, which is the other one. Everyone calls him Minuteman because they're spelled the same.
Right. But he said it was funny because he said when he was writing the script, he basically just the name he came up with the character is what he did. So, like, you know, the head guy there? What is his? I keep forgetting his name.
Strobe.
The Strobe was actually Laserman originally was the name in the script, but apparently, like, you know, U.S. Bill was Dollar Bill, and they had to apparently there's a lot of names that got changed because of legal crash collisions. Like Dollar
Bill.
Yeah,
it was a U.S. Dollar Bill superhero, something at some stage. But it's hard to find superhero names now, because all the good ones have been taken.
Right, yeah.
We're not going to be calling Wolverine. What are you going to call yourself? The Honey Badger?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of Australian animals you could call yourself, I suppose, but I mean, there's extinct marsupials that kind of work. There was a small superhero comic here in Australia where they had a guy called the Thylacine, which was a marsupial leopard that's extinct.
Yep.
So even that's been covered. It's very hard to find a decent name for a superhero.
Yeah, they've got to two-word names now. Seems to be the rule of the day.
Black Fart and things like that. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
But, you know, I think basically it's going to get to the stage where superhero names are going to have to be like Bob Smith.
Dean
John. Oh, yeah, that guy who shoots lasers out of his eyes, Dean Dickinson, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
But
Dirk Diggler, yeah.
Dirk Diggler. What's his superpower? Oh, yeah, they do talk about another superhero who has this great growth that comes out of his chest.
Yeah.
He's a villain. And then the weevil, being the bastard, he just tells everybody that it was actually his scrotum.
Yeah,
and they pushed it up through the hole in the chest of his suit so people wouldn't know it was his scrotum.
Right. Who is it that says, oh, he touched my face with that?
One of the female characters.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of movie it is. And the thing is, it does embrace its weirdness and does embrace its origins really well. And I think that what James Gunn did in this reflects well for the possibilities of Guardians of the Galaxy, which is probably one of the hardest of the Marvel films to do, because there's hardly any of it set on Earth at all.
Right. Yeah.
So you create everything from scratch.
Yep.
You can't drive a Maserati down the street the way Tony Stark did in the first film.
Right.
They're really constructing everything from scratch, and one of their characters is a CGI raccoon who talks. So you're going to have that as a bit of a barrier. But I think if anybody can do it, I think James Gunn can. He did a marvelous movie called Super.
Yes, I saw that, yes.
Super's a fantastic film, and it's very dark. It does show that this guy knows the genre inside out.
Yeah.
And I think that's what these Marvel franchise films need, even though they are doing that really interesting thing with Iron Man 3 of getting Shane Black to do the script, which I find really interesting because he did things like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang with Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer.
Oh, okay. I wasn't.
And he did the only really good post Die Hard Bruce Willis action film, which was the Last Boy Scout.
Right, right.
Which is really interesting from a character point of view. It was really underappreciated at the time. I've got it on Blu-ray now. And I rewatched it a couple of months ago, and I thought, this is a bloody good action film. It's character-based. It really does have a lot of guts and a lot of heart to it, and it doesn't do what's expected, which is one of the things that apparently, from what I'm reading, is going to happen with Iron Man 3 when you expect it to zig it'll zag.
Oh, good.
And kind of like that. I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to be sitting there with Jamie and Sarah, my friends who I go to see these action films with, and we're just going to have a great time with it, I think.
Yep.
But, so what else did you hear about the specials from that extra stuff?
Well, the one thing was Padgett said, and I kind of a little bit agreed with, she said that the movie gets about, I think, a third of the way in, and they suddenly interrupt with this, like, introduction thing where you have Power Chick, and I forget who the guy was, sort of going through who the specials were, the history of the group a bit. And she really felt that should have been at the beginning of the film. And I sort of half agree with her. I think it should have been earlier in the film. I think it would have been better served being earlier in the film. But I don't know if it needed to be right at the beginning. But
yeah, I think about maybe 10, 15 minutes in.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah. And actually, the thing Jim Gunn said was really interesting was he said what really he felt saved the film to our extent was the editing, because apparently some of the shots he did, especially like in the superhero with the meeting where they're at the table, a lot of the camera shots were just like pan shots of one side of the table. You saw everyone in the shot, and it sort of went back and forth between opposite sides of the table, and he said it looked really dreadful in the original way they shot it, but apparently they got some film editor in who really put it together in such a way that he really gave full credit to the guy who put the film together for making the film work as well as it did.
Yeah, again, that's one of the things with having a smaller budget. You don't get you don't get the time to make those choice of shots as much. It was filmed in 18 days, so I can understand why they would have had that kind of limitation.
Yeah.
But apparently the guy who directed it, Craig Mazin, was one of the writers on The Hangover Part 2.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and worked on superhero movie, two of the scary movies. And a few other things. So, you know, he's still got a job in Korea there. So,
yep.
And I think that, yeah, I mean, 18 days for a movie, the only things I can compare it to, last Paleo Cinema, I talked about the Bud Bedecker Westerns with Randolph Scott. And all of them were filmed in 18 days as well. And that requires so much pre-production. You know, you've got to be on site at just the right time to do it with that kind of limitation. And you've got to get your shots regardless. And you've got to make sure that everything is planned meticulously beforehand, because you don't have the time, once they start filming and the actors are on there, to fuck around with it at all. It's an incredibly disciplined way of shooting a film, even with that kind of a low budget.
Right.
And I think the acting in this film is really good too. I mean, everyone brings their A game. Sean Gunn is really weird playing Alien Baby.
Alien Orphan, yeah.
Alien Orphan, yeah. Yeah, he's just kind of weird. He's bright green, he's bald, he's got a weird-shaped head to start with.
Yeah.
And he does things like eat entire lumps of butter for dinner.
Yeah, that's his breakfast in the morning, apparently, yeah.
Yeah, breakfast in the morning, and there are times when he's incredibly cogent, like when he's ordering a drink in the bar.
Yeah, yeah, he knew exactly what he wanted.
And other times where he makes Mork from Mork look like a Republican.
Yeah.
And, that's kind of cool. And the ensemble works, I think, in this film, even though it was filmed on that tight 18-day budget. Yeah. For some reason, the whole lot holds together surprisingly well.
Yeah. Did you feel there were, like, maybe too many characters in it? Because that's kind of, in going through it the second time, the first time I saw it, that was kind of I thought that, like, I would have liked to have traded some of the characters for more development on some of the other characters. But I've only seen it the one time, and then I saw it the second time with the director's commentary. So.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I kind of like, I mean, things like the girl, what was it? Powerchick.
Powerchick, yeah.
I think it was a little bit superfluous apart from the fact she was a lesbian and a muck, you don't know. I think that that was one of the ones, but I kind of like the fact that they had a rough gender balance.
Yes.
On the superhero team. It wasn't just all guys.
Yeah.
They were really kind of deliberately looking at that balance, the character played by Patrick Bruce and Thomas Hayden Church, the Strobe and Miss Indestructible, were a married couple. They did bring a lot of stronger female characters in there. I mean, Power Chick's her own person. Deadly Girl is just scary.
Deadly Girl is awesome. I like Deadly Girl.
Deadly Girl, yeah. Deadly Girl rocks. And even Nightbird kind of has her own arc story, which is kind of nice too. And Rob Lowe playing the Weevils, just it's a perfect name for his character in a sense, isn't it? He's a little insect.
Yes. Yeah,
and I mean, there's some really funny bits too, like the action figures that they do for them with this kind of third rate toy company.
Yes. So who's the guy who ended up with the the spare Richard Dawson heads?
Yeah, they had spare Richard Dawson heads left over from Hogan's Heroes action figures, so they stuck on one of the figures and they made Minute Man black and with his weapon being a fishing rod.
That's right.
Shit like that.
Miss Indestructible with her enormous boobs,
they kind of went there with that. And shows, I mean, there have been action figures in the early days of things before people were really careful about them. They look nothing like the characters. Even recently, a few years ago, they had that Eragon film, which had John Malkovich in it.
Right.
And I got a John Malkovich action figure from that, and it doesn't look anything like John Malkovich.
Oh, you know,
I think I got a hamburger meal or something because I was still doing merchandising in those days. And the John Malkovich action figure doesn't look anything like John Malkovich.
Yeah, that could be a rights issue because I know my wife fixes pinball machines as her day job. There's a Back to the Future pinball machine, and I'm trying to and there's the one character you don't really see on it is Matthew J. Fox. Because he didn't let them give him the rights to use his image, so you don't actually see. Michael J. Fox. You don't see him anywhere on the pin really, and you see a character, but it doesn't look like him, and it's because he didn't have the rights to his image, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the John Malkovich action figure looks a bit like a Matthew McConaughey action figure for some reason, but I've got it there, and I go, that's my action figure for that because I do collect a few of them. It's a bit like the movie posters I collect, the old Daybill posters. I only do it for movies I really like, even though I may be able to find cheap ones for movies that are worth a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I only buy things with my passion, so most of the action figures I got, like my John McClane action figure.
Oh, cool.
From Die Hard. It's kind of cool, but they're things that I really specifically do like. Because I don't have enough money to be non-selective on this.
Right, yeah.
So we'll probably wrap up the specials. Anything else you want to say about it, apart from the fact that people should watch it, because it's a lot of fun?
No, I think we have everything.
Yeah. And, right at the end, you do get to see them use their powers, which is kind of nice. I do like that.
Yeah.
That obviously, the effects budget was almost zero, but they do give you the sense that, these guys can kick ass if necessary.
Yeah. If you're into big budget Hollywood stuff, it might feel a bit anticlimactic, but you can tell it was definitely a low budget film.
Yeah, the funny thing is that the visuals for the trailer actually show those bits of their superpowers.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
They cut to those, so the trailer itself does the bit at the end in a sense. So if people want to look at it on YouTube, you will get that feel for what the superpowers for each character are.
Mm-hmm.
So, so that's about it for that one. The specials is fun. It is out on a special, DVD set in the US. I did try to buy it, but they won't sell to Australia, the people that are selling it on Amazon. So, too bad for them. Your exchange rate just went down because of that. But, anything else you want to say? Give your website a plug as well.
Oh, yeah. I have a web blog at fantastictelevision.wordpress.com. You can see me talking about all the television shows I'm watching, some of which I mentioned earlier.
And you also show up occasionally on Vince and Mary and Nick's movie cast?
Great, yes, I show up on the B-movie cast. I do an Outer Limits. Vince and I are gradually going through the Outer Limits or classic series on that.
Any intention when you finish that one to go on to the later Outer Limits series?
I that'd be a hard sell for Vince. I think I like it myself. It's obviously, you know, hit or miss. He talks about all sorts of stuff. You know, my vote would be Ghost Story: Circle of Fear, which was a William Castle one season wonder series that came out in the 80s or no 70s. I'm sorry.
You can always look at the Night Gallery as well. It's kind of cool.
Yep.
Okay. So. That's about it. Let's wrap it up now. I'll do the feedback after you've gone off to enjoy your Saturday and I've gone to bed to enjoy my Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And thanks again for being on, Nick. I really appreciate it, mate. And I think we've covered superhero movies well. I don't think people are going to lack for a number of superhero films to watch over the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem to be an incredible growth area in cinema these days.
Yes, that's definitely, yeah. Well, Marvel's just doing such a great job with their property there.
Yeah, less so DC, but that's another issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you seen the Man of Steel? Before we do, I'll just ask you, have you seen the Man of Steel trailer where it looks like he's on Deadliest Catch?
Yeah, I did, and it's not really inspired me to see the film, to be quite honest.
I think they're hiding a lot of stuff there, but it may be another case where they just don't have that savvy to show the right stuff.
Right.
Hook the audience a bit. Maybe there's going to be another trailer coming out just before it comes out.
Right.
But the dark and gloomy stuff feels a bit more Batman-y than Superman-y to me.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of odd,
Okay, well, that's about it. Anyway, Nick, thanks. I'll have you on again, mate. I always appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, well, you take care, and I'll let you get on with your day.
Okay.
Okay, that's about it for the Martian Drive-In podcast number 12. Next podcast is going to be the first anniversary edition. So I'm going to leave people with a question. If the Martian Drive-In podcast was going to do a trauma film from Lloyd Kaufman's studio, which trauma film should I do? So you can email me at cultguru, K-U-L-T-G-U-R-U, at gmail.com. Or message me on Facebook and just let me know which trauma film we should do. It won't be on the next episode, but it'll be on the one after that. So we may get two trauma films together and do them. So take care of yourselves, watch the skies, and I'll be back in 2 weeks with a Paleo Cinema and in 4 weeks with another Martian Drive-In podcast. Take care.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.